Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
We are having now Spiros Polalis on revisiting mountain villages in Greece after recent fires.
Thank you, Vule, and thank you for being with us today. Actually, yesterday we talked about signature architecture, and I had a few slides I just want to show you, and show that this was happening in Athens. And however, the real interesting architecture is what happens, the vernacular architectures, in the many other places that we saw yesterday by Spiros Amourgis. This is in Spetses. And of course, there are very many instances that we really enjoy. And this is what I really miss when I'm in Boston. Regardless how more beautiful the buildings appear to be there and how they appear in glossy magazines. And there are these very narrow walkways in the small islands, and these pieces that they're made of found materials that really intrigue me, next to details like the one on the right, and also the sea, the proximity to the sea, the water, and everything else. So, and also the enjoyment of the warm weather, the warm sea, and the architecture that does not follow a grid, does not follow, actually it has followed its own rules throughout the centuries. And the beautiful rocks on the sea, actually I believe this is probably one of the most beautiful rocks ever. It's like the sitting lion, this outside Poros. And architecture like these monasteries and islands like Simi. I believe, Spiro, you saw the few things yesterday like this. Quite a variety of architecture and dramatic landscapes, and many times not attributed to a particular architect, but rather throughout the centuries. And all this getting together and mesh of the sea, the boats, the houses, the traditional materials, the ancient found pieces like this was found in the Sea of Poros. It's the original marble next to a reconstructed house. And here, traditional materials. Actually, I wanted to show this image because I really enjoy it from the point of view that this person breaks some eggs in the paint to paint the house. So it's going to be like an emulsifier. And this is where we really enjoy using traditional materials as opposed to getting the plastic Benjamin Moore or California to paint the houses. Also found places like this with nice pieces of stone next to the sea. This is in Andros. Actually, this is one of the... It's an amazing place to sit and very anatomical as well. And also Greece is, I would say, sort of a funny place from the point of view that what we see here is we see Al Gore next to the sea in... actually in Andros, with the clergy here and the family of Michael Dertouzos. And this is the bust of Michael Dertouzos when Al Gore had come to talk about his contribution to information technology. He's the founder of the Internet. He was one of the players of the Internet. So they got together in Andros and next to the sea. Of course, having said all this, Athens is a very different reality. This is in the center of Athens with monuments, with buildings that they are like this. I wish they were designed by the architects that George was showing us a few minutes ago, but this is what it is. And this is the today's vernacular in Athens, and the famous Acalyptus on the back that we don't want to show that much about it, and cars everywhere, really everywhere, that you barely can go through, and all kinds of things all around. But anyway, this is the reality how it is in Athens, and I would like to move now to show something very different. And in showing this very different, I have taken a very big risk because I'm going to show you the work of students. And showing the work of students and posing a problem, my objective is to engage you in a very real problem. However, I'm going to show you the work of about 14 students, and George before saw the work of 14 architects out of the thousands that have been graduated and practiced in Greece in the last 50 years. And I would say mine is probably 1 in 1,000. So the chances are that their work is not going to be nearly as interesting as the one you saw before. However, I saw the work of the students for a very specific purpose, and I'm going to explain it to you. Let me show you here. This is a house that was destroyed this summer in one of the villages in Ilia. And what happened in Greece, there were very many fires. Here we see a satellite image showing the fires and the smoke. And the area we're talking about is here. And here we see more smoke coming, and we see these images from the satellites. And again here it shows the areas that have been devastated with fires. And it was an amazing environmental disaster. Talking about fires in California, it is, I would say, relevant because you also have big fires here. Sometimes people in Greece believe that it was the inability of the forces there to put down the fires. So when we see what happens here in California, we are a little more tolerant. Again, here you see all the different lights. This is our area. And these are some statistics. And 65 people died. And 65 people died because they did not know how to handle the fires. We learned since then. Basically, all the people who died, they died because they left their villages and they caught by fire on the way, going from the villages to either to another village or to the town. Those who stayed in the villages did not suffer at all. However, nobody informed them that they should not leave. And this is how houses were destroyed. The wooden roof here has collapsed. And here you see more houses like this. At the same time, in villages that they are not as pristine or as beautiful as the ones that Spiros Amourgis was showing us yesterday, you can see interventions like this, and we're going to see more interventions like this. It's interesting that those type of houses did very well in the fire. And they did very well because, first, there was not much to catch a fire, and second, because there were more recent and people protected them with water more than the other ones. So we see that houses like this and like that survived. But at the same time, I want you to show that we don't have the heritage here that we saw before in the islands or what we saw yesterday. Here you see destroyed land. Green starts coming out. This is a few months after the fire. And here you see more and more destroyed houses. And these are the containers that people live. And even a few months later, cars, burned cars, were just outside. The fire was so fast that the wind was really making the fire to jump areas, so that is burned. Other areas are burned, some survived. And this is the place that 28 people died. This is just outside Artemide. And they died actually in this open land. This is a sort of a memorial that has been put in place. And here is looking at the same piece of land. This is where the memorial is, and we look downwards. There was no accident. There was just fire and smoke that trapped them there, and they were not able to leave. And actually, this is the car of the vice mayor of Zaharo, who also died there. It's interesting that more people were there, and they got in another car like this, and they drove through the fire, and they saved themselves, but not these particular ones here, because this car was stuck in, actually could not go through here. They could not see anything. This is what they were saying. So, after this devastation, the question was how to help. And tons of money was poured in. And here we see surveyors just surveying. This is the main municipal building in one of the villages in Artemida. And these people are working for a private company called Folie Folie that a relative of the woman with the four children that they died in that incident, which was probably the most dramatic, cases of victims. A relative of them was working for Folie Folie, and Folie Folie decided to rebuild those buildings, and they did this very, very quickly. So this is the medical center of the village, and they rebuilt it within a couple of months. And here you see the restoration. And I would say they built it more or less the way it was before. And here we see a burnt house from the window of that restored building. And at the same time, the Cypriot government walked in and they said that they're going to save and rebuild many of the houses. Here they saw one of the houses they tried to salvage. You see all these ways of bracing it. And you see that... from other angles, this is a nice stone house. At the same time, the house that we see up there, which is reinforced concrete, the Cypriots said that it should be demolished because being reinforced concrete and having suffered a high temperature with the fires, they felt that it's not safe. I don't believe that is the real reason. The real reason is that they felt that this house does not belong to this village. So here we see the house on the other side. So this is, has big X's and it's going to be demolished. So the Vardinogiannis family also walked in, and there is another village next to the Artemis, the one that we saw there. And they said that they are going to restore that village as well. So the question that came up was, how should we approach the rebuilding of the villages? And this is the main question I have for all of you. People do not have space to live, and they live in containers. Usually these people are older, and they're just staying on the villages because they do not have the opportunity to go to the big cities. The economy is not in good shape. The farms have been burned. And Vardinogiannis comes in and says, we are going to build it to you, for you, as quickly as we can, exactly the way it was, because we don't want to get involved with permitting, we don't want to get involved with architects, we just want to have it built. I asked them if they're going to use an architect, and the answer was, no, we don't need them. But then they said, oh, wait a minute, there are a few houses that the toilet is outside the house, so we would rather have an architect because it's a good idea to bring the toilet inside the house. I say this because this is the reality here. And the question is, how should we approach? Is speed more important, just go in and rebuild something the way it was? Or should we do something different? And then the questions become much bigger. Like, what is the economy of the area? How life is going to be sustained? What is the future of those areas which used to be very beautiful? Now they're burned, but as we know, nature is going to reinvent itself. By the way, fires themselves, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Fire means regeneration of the vegetation as long as two things do not happen. One is that as long as the water does not take the fertile soil away, does not wash it away, and actually the Greek state did a wonderful work in protecting, using the burned trunks of tree to protect the soil from living. And the second one is as long as goats or katsikes do not eat the vegetation that comes out. And that is the big challenge. How to make sure that goats do not go to the areas, especially to wild areas, the forests, so they do not eat the new vegetation as it comes out. Because if that is going to happen, then we are not going to see new vegetation again. I want to show you here some ways of restoration. Actually, this is from a village near the Apollo Temple. It's called Abelionas. And a Greek hotel operator had, who is coming actually from that area, has restored many of the houses. And I want to show you this because you see here the old way of putting stone structures, and here you see the new way of putting stone structure, and you see how artificial it looks. Or they restore in this manner, or in this manner, which means that they're using traditional materials, but as Eleni was saying yesterday, Eleni Fessa, not always using traditional materials leads to a nice architecture. And here you see some hotels they have built and some oversized balconies simply because the guests want to have oversized balconies. And then sometimes they have combined the brick and the stone looks real veneer, as you can see it here. So I'm going to show you the work and the approach of a group of students, and here we are all together in Olympia, and this group of students are from the University of Patra that I taught the last semester on this very specific subject. And two of the students, actually Wei Bao, who is here, and Kosuke Bando, are from Harvard, and we were working with video conferencing, and we all worked on the same subject. And let me try to be a little faster here. We did a wonderful tour, and we enjoyed the marvels like the Nike of Paeonios in Olympia. We went to Andritzen, among other places, and we talked with the vice mayor and some other people, and we asked them what is the economy of the area, how it's going to survive, and they were all very pessimistic, saying now we have only 500 people and the area is not sustained, and they were wondering how this is going to go ahead. Actually, it's amazing that everywhere we're going, they wanted to pay for our drinks and our coffee. Here you see more, and then here you see in Olympia the use of trunks to protect the soil from coming down. And again, we photographed very many buildings, trying to learn from buildings. And we went to places like Monembasia, which is a totally different case. It's a preserved settlement. And here we saw yesterday this window to be open, and now it's closed, Spiro. But this had the fortune to be isolated and not to have any modern structures. And I use the term modern, actually, not contemporary structures, not concrete structures. So having visited all these places, and here the students again, and looking at all the stone, and you had the quote before, as long as it is stone and soil, this is what I like, you said before, and again, going back and forth on the devastation and going to the Apollo Temple. And actually here you see we are in the Apollo Temple with two women who, one of them is the wife of the Prodos Kinotitos, of the chairman of the municipality of one of the villages that we were working on. Again, looking at villages like this, that they have severe problems of landslides as a result of the fires. Let's continue here. Let me show you more of these. So, and then as we were walking and trying to find out what is going on in that part of the world, about 10 kilometers from where we are, we found out a small village that nobody was telling us about. And this small village had been abandoned because a few years earlier, its residents had moved near the coast, because that was up in the mountains, and they had left that village. Actually, this is a village that is very well preserved. This is the school, and from the window we could see the old pieces in the village. It's called Taxiarches. And eventually, after doing a lot of digging, we found out that this building, this village, has been bought by friends. After talking and trying to extract information from the locals, they told me that a few years later, if you come back again, you better speak French because you will not be able to communicate in the village of Taxiarches anymore. But basically, that was a monument of these old stone houses left in an area that was completely unknown in the mountains. And they are repairing. However, the way they repair, you see they put lights like this, and then here you see a little more of these images and how they restore the houses. You see how they restore using concrete with not so much respect to the traditional techniques of building, but nevertheless, I would say it's okay. And they have built platforms like this. This is just a walkway to go across a creek here. Some water is coming down. But you look at the street furniture. So, again, the sensitivity is not exactly there. So having seen all these things and going back to the burnt houses, I was expecting that the students are going to follow a more traditional way of restoring. And when you teach a design studio, you try to influence the students, but not much. Because if you influence the students, it's like they're working in your own studio or in your own office. In an academic environment, you want to get the best out of them. And I was very surprised to see that they had in mind something very, very different. And they had in mind something very different, which I believe it is the new way of thinking of the emerging Greek architects. Because if I have so many students and all of them think along the same lines, and at the same time, the two American students, they merged very much with the others, and they were all reacting the same way. So we looked at one of the villages, which is Rodina, and here it shows the different distances, and it is 10 kilometers from the head village of Zacharo. And in the Rodina village, with a population of 70 people, and mainly being part of agricultural economy, at 330 meters high, the students did a master plan. And in the master plan, they defined where the entrances of the village is. They defined and they photographed the different pieces. And then they took photographs, they documented. By the way, we had almost no information from the Greek state. So we had to work on maps of 1 to 50,000 from the army, and then we had to simply do surveying of the area. And here, let me go a little faster. And here you see the houses you see in Rodina, including houses of this type and that type. And there were so many burnt houses, as you see here, the yellow ones. And the question was what to do with them. And there were some ruins before even the fire. And then the focus was on public spaces because these villages had very little public space, if anything. Actually, this particular village did not have a public space. Even the church was sort of on the road. And they tried to define what they were, but they were mostly places that cars were parked. And then define the road networks, the different interventions, and eventually, I'm going to show some projects. This came from a student from Harvard who basically wanted to remember the fire. Actually, I want to show you this project not so much because it fits in the village, but because it generated a great controversy. He said, we should not rebuild everything. We should remember the fire. The Greek students reacted almost violently at the beginning. They said, no, we should erase the memory. The fire is not something to remember. We remember wars and we make memorials for wars, but not for the memory. And he said, wait a minute. Yes, we do things for wars. And he saw this Hiroshima Peace Memorial, which is a burned church in Hiroshima, but he also saw this earthquake from the Kobe earthquake, the house of an architect that has been restored, but has been restored in a way to keep the original house there, damaged by the earthquake, as a memory to the earthquake so people can see and visit. So Kosuke insisted on his idea. He talked to the villagers, and here are the villagers after dinner. And he made the board game, and he started putting different board game here, and he started asking, where is a public space? What do you want to see in your village? And so on. And eventually, he got the consensus of the villagers, and he came to the point to suggest that he would like to use burned wood. And with the burned wood, and actually this tree was burning for about 3 months, with the fire all the time. It was like a monument. So he was inspired by the shape, and he proposed the shape like this. And let me go a little faster here. He has worked the details. Actually, he wants to make this an observation tower as well. And he wants to use this as a camera obscura to be able to see different pieces that he proposes not to be restored. And eventually, the tower is going to become part of the village. Now, this is very strange for Greece. I'm not sure how to criticize it, but I want just to give it for you as an idea. Then others looked at other parts of the village. They looked at an area that people go for a panegyri or for a feast during the summer, and they proposed, actually they studied the density of use, and they proposed different usages, including a theater, in a way, trying to make public spaces. Priam was part of our studies, and eventually they proposed to remake the spaces and not to simply leave them the way they were before. Others took burnt houses and suggested to make them walkways and make in the burnt houses actually a steel structure and make it walk through the steel structure and make the ruin part of the public space and the public walkways in the village. And others proposed to do some hostels. And again, the hostel here is another ruin. And instead of redoing the ruin, they keep the stone walls and then make a steel structure inside. And eventually, they built residences, very modern residences, that they combine the outer cell and an inner cell, and others propose to do a winery, and here they give all the different suggestions here for the winery. So this is the winery, you see the ruin. But again, instead of fixing this ruin, what they suggest to do is after they study, and this is in this terrible shape, they study the different phases of how it was built. The primary building was this first piece here, then there was a first expansion, second expansion, and eventually they suggested that they make a winery within this structure, within a concrete structure. Let me go a little faster here, and eventually they put all the production of the wine production inside this building, and leads to structure like this. And this is all to specifications and studying the wine production of the area. Then others suggested to take the cell from the outside. Actually, this is the house that they're rebuilding, and this is next to another burnt house. And here we see a plan. And basically use stone on the outside, but make the interior a very compact interior with different levels. And again, keep stone on the outside, rebuild the stone. That was actually one of the few projects that suggest to rebuild the exterior. But even if you rebuild the exterior, the interior is all very different. And it's a very compact house that follows a very different architecture. We continue with more. Actually, this is a youth center, another ruin. This is the situation of how things are. There is a lot of trash outside right now and cars like this. And this person documented this building. This is the roof. This is actually the upper side of the roof. And I'm going to go faster to show you what it is in this old oil pressing, Eleotrivion. And looks at all this crap which is there right now. This has been not been working for 20 years, so it's not the fires. The problem is much bigger than the fires. And he suggests to do something of this nature and to restore it and make it a youth center for the youth of the area. And he's using this kind of artificial plants, and these artificial plants are standalone and also they're covering the roof. And then he's using a belt that goes inside and out, paints everything in bold red, works out the plan, and eventually this is the proposal with using the old oil presses for bookshelves and using the back of the room as a stage for music in an effort to keep people there, young people busy in the village. There is always an issue on how can we do new residences, and Pavlos did the new residences, and basically his idea was that because of telecommuting and using the computer, people can work there, and he believes that everywhere in the whole countryside we can have people working, and basically all over the world. So he's taken the map and put many red dots and studies the traditional typology of buildings. He adds additional usages like parking, working space, vertical movement, kitchen, bathrooms, and eventually comes with a particular style, which I'm going to show you to you very quickly. And eventually he places this new building on the village, on the grounds that we will need to build new, and the new should not be copies of the traditional buildings. That was half of the exercise. There is a bigger problem in Greece, and the bigger problem in Greece is that the policy, the public policy, does not allow the development of new towns. As a result, the old towns are being expanded, trying to accommodate people who leave the villages. So what we see is we see Kefalochoria, or the head towns in the area, and Zaharo is one of those, or Kyparissia in the area we're talking about, that from small villages they became much bigger. We believe this is wrong. At the time that we do new towns all over the world, especially recently, because there is a need for new towns for the quality of urban life that we're thinking before, and we see Korea and Saudi Arabia and other parts of the world that they're doing it in order to provide better towns than the ones that exist already. In Greece, it's really wrong that we do not do that. So one of the exercises of the students was to think and do a new town on the excuse that villages like this are subject to landslides, that they are going to destroy some of the houses, so there is a real need, but that was only the excuse. So basically what we did is we proposed that the very many villages are going to go to a new place, and we studied on the map and we saw that the very many villages are spread on the countryside in a way that at the time that there was no easy transportation to go to their farms, to cultivate their farms. But now with the new roads, as they exist, and with farmers having transportation means, then there is no need anymore to have so many villages spread as they are. So we expect to see a consolidation, and the business plan that we see is that we expect to see a consolidation of a town that's going to provide the amenities of smaller towns, so they act as the first wave of people who leave the villages, but they do not go to Patra or to Athens, and at the same time, they go back to the villages for the weekends, and they go back to the village for the recreation. By the way, this is a problem that is seen like this, as we heard from Wei Bao, the Chinese student, in China as well, where the government wants to build towns of about 25,000 people to keep the villagers from going to the big cities. The whole issue of going to the urban centers is a big problem worldwide. So let me continue here. Actually, we see some nice images again, but let me go a little faster and simply say that the students looked at these new towns. We had great difficulty because there is no tradition in Greece to think about new towns. The material we have is what Spiros Amourgis presented yesterday about the grid, about the cities, the work of Doxiadis, but not much more, and certainly not to see examples of these things. So we started making some assumptions on square And also we started looking at public buildings, and then when we went to look even at the villages we like Dimitsana and Andritsana, we found very little in terms of public usage. We had to go to Priin to see more and understand better how cities should be. And here we see the master plan of some students who thought about the different networks, who thought about the different settings. Let me go a little faster. Who proposed different ways of development, criticizing the polykatikia of Athens and trying to give more human and better quality of life approach. And they looked at low density, medium density. And the students from China, from Harvard, really impressed us on the way how he understood very well the issues of town planning. One of the exercises I should tell you is that the new town should be on slope, not in a flat area, just to make it a little more relevant for the Greek landscape, but also a little more complicated. And this is what he did. Actually, he started with the contours, and then he started developing some computer models with the help of a Greek professor at Harvard who teaches algorithmic architecture, Kostas Terzidis. And he started moving the contours doing the grid in real-time computer simulations. And eventually, he proposed a three-town development, very similar to what we see in Sifnos, for example, that we see the different villages, one a little further away from the other, and then studying the different assemblies, trying to imitate the way that the villages that he visited were built and avoiding the square grid. He says that he was inspired by Acropolis and Olympia and just looking at the different angles among the different structures. And eventually he developed things like this, and eventually here we see the different public spaces and private spaces, and he planted olive trees all around, so this is all immersed in olive trees, and here he has produced some three-dimensional structures that show this new land development that follows some rigorous approaches, follows some studies of the sun and shadows, some cross-sections, and eventually goes and defines the urban center where he unifies several of these buildings as one to provide indoor and outdoor space. At the same time, the students started thinking about how we can make the area more attractive from a tourist point of view. So one of the students proposed an olive museum, an olive park, and she proposed this olive park by again studying, starting with the oil ideogram and making it part of the building and creating some tourist attractions so tourists can go not only on the sea and only during the summer, but even start thinking about winter tourism. And actually she says she wants to pursue this even professionally. And another student observed that cemeteries were basically everywhere, and she started criticizing the cemeteries and churches, so she decided to design a new church. She talked with the priest, she understood the procession, and she wanted to make a church with a cemetery. And here I show you some images, and eventually these are the graves. And that was the work of the students I wanted to show you. Now, what really impressed me was that the work of the students was very different than what I was expecting. I was expecting to see traditional work. I was expecting to see stone and wood, and in a way that it would look more like Monemvasia. And I was expecting to see how they can correct the buildings that they were there, all the concrete buildings. And I presented to you as an experiment and laboratory to see what is coming. And in a way, what Yorgos showed us before with the new architects, Agelidakis and Antonas and the others, this is not very different. We see that Greece is very much part of the international scene. And although if you go to Greece, you may not understand you are in Greece other than with other signs. Someone asked that question yesterday. I believe it's going to be something that's going to be that's going to tell us about what it is, but definitely this is something that we have to watch out. These are 19, 20 years old people, very talented, and this is how they wanted to express themselves. I don't believe it's the role of the teacher to tell them what to do. I believe the role of the teacher is to get the best out of them and then do their work and criticize. Now, if they had to do professional work, I don't know if that would fly. And I'm very much interested in seeing how journalists and politicians in Greece are going to perceive this, although my cousin, the director of the Western Prefecture, he came to the review and he was enthusiastic about this work. So we have to take care of the people who live in these containers. At the same time, this is from the French village. Here you see the sign of the developer, and one of the students looks at the sign of the developer there, and she's worrying what is going to happen in the future here. People start putting on their ruins the new antennas just to be able to get satellite, and nature started already being revitalizing, as we can see here. And again, I have some images from all of us, and basically these are the people I should credit for their work. So I run a very big risk here. I did not show the work of famous architects, but who knows, one of them may be famous a few years down the road. Thank you very much.
And now I would like to call on Professor Dimitris Isaias, who is going to talk about questions about tradition, the case of modern Greek architecture. Professor Isaias.
It gives me great pleasure to be addressing to all of you gathered here today to discuss with us the case of modern Greek architecture. Before starting my effort to answer, from an architectural point of view, some questions about tradition, I would like to thank Professor Athanasakis and Professor Tsouna, who is the person who gathered us all together for the first time on September 9th in Athens and helped us organize this conference. My address is organized in two parts. Being an architect, but also a teacher, I felt that just speaking about traditional architecture wasn't enough. Something was missing. So I decided to include some examples of my interpretation of tradition from my architectural work as a tool to clarify my point of view. Despite the fact that the designing of any new building is governed every time by the logic of a new proposal, nothing is born from zero. Architecture in Greece, like in any other area of the world, is conferring with the landscape, researches the relations between closed and open spaces, and solves the problems of the functional needs. Parameters change, but the procedure remains consistent. Greek cities, as in any other city of the world, are living organisms, and in this sense, the new building needs to confer with what is around it, but also to create a path for the future. How does someone design and build among layers of ruins, some might say fabulous ruins, of 30 centuries? Even if someone chooses to ignore them, he creates a particular discussion with them. How does tradition influence modern Greek architecture? This question is, as I believe, the main topic of this conference. At this point, let me clarify some of my thoughts about tradition. Tradition is a composite word formed by the Latin prefix trans, signified over or beyond, or denoting a complete change, and the verb do. With the help of any dictionary, we will see that it means the transmission of opinions or practices to posterity orally, without written memorials, or that is handed down from age to age by oral communication. Similar to our ears are words such as transform, from trans, the same prefix, and form, transfer, trans, and the Greek verb phero, which meaning to bear or to carry, or translate, the same prefix, to means to explain or to render into another language. This is true with most Latin-influenced European languages. For example, in France, it's tradition, traduction, traditione. All European languages have the same prefix and the same formation of those words. But what is the Greek word for tradition? It's paradosi, formed by the Greek prefix para, signifying beside or beyond, and the ancient Greek verb didomi, which means to give. The prefix para, as all of you know, is the very same used for paradigm, para plus dignimi, meaning to show, or for parallel. To make things even worse for us, if we look in a well-known and recently published Greek dictionary, we will see that paradosi, that, as you remember, is the Greek word for tradition, also means the transfer of power and the government paradidi to the new government, to surrender, a soldier paradidite, or to give a lecture. A teacher is giving a lecture, paradidi. I believe that those amateurish linguistic observations permit us to realize that when we talk about tradition in Greek, we have a completely different framework of possible meanings. This is understandable, but on the other hand, it's not easy for an architect or any other creator to accept that her or his work is a kind of surrender to someone or something that gives lectures or shows paradigms. Architects, on the other hand, feel safer, even happy, to transfer or translate forms of the past to today's reality. It is clear to me that talking about tradition might have a completely different meaning between us. Tradition might function in two ways, sometimes as a motivating force and some other times as an invariable constant. It is at the same time a blessing and a curse. The distance between the respect of the tradition and the ridiculous is easily covered. What makes the picture look at least funny? Parenthesis, this is a cover page of an LP dated from the late 50s, from a 1956 tour of Dizzy Gillespie in Greece, among other countries. This is the back cover of the LP, with Dizzy Gillespie, written Dizzy Gillespie in Greek upstairs, and saying the story of this. None of the elements of these pictures by itself are funny. John Burks, also known as Dizzy Gillespie, was one of the most significant personalities of the 20th century's music, an innovative jazz performer. From the other hand, his costume is undoubtedly a handsome one, a typical costume of a Greek tsolias, a costume used today from the honorary presidential guard. The building behind Dizzy, probably Zappion, I'm not sure, but I think it's Zappion, a 19th century neoclassical building, at the center of Athens, whether someone likes it or not, is not funny at all, if seen by itself alone. So what makes us laugh? They simply, as I believe, do not match together. In the same way, it is impossible to take over the beautiful architecture of a past era and transplant it to today's cities. It becomes false and pretentious, sometimes approaches kitsch, as this fantastic building in the northern part of Greece. Time is a determinate factor, either as an element of inspiration or as an element of broader meaning, the sense of which defines directly or indirectly the characteristics of a work of art. Time is the unmistakable judge of the quality and the value of a work of art or an architectural creation. The architectural space is born and acquires ideological context from the moment it is inhabited, from the moment it becomes a living space. Man moving with freedom in its space, man that experiences with his own personal way every smaller corner of this space, brings this architectural space into existence. Dark or bright, Silent or loud, open or close, the built space incorporates and expresses with its material substance all the human sentiments. Even the deserted houses or the ruins of an ancient city, carrying the memories of the past, and they reveal information of the people that inhabited them, their habits and their civilization. Space is a bearer of memories, active part of the events that defined it and marked it. The architectural space becomes in this way the credible witness of the history of the human experiences. An independent building or a city as a whole becomes a living entity that is born, lives and dies. The architectural space confines and protects the living organism that lives in it, like the organism that lives in a cell, in a way that one cannot exist without the other. In the same way, the living creatures continuously transform in nature in their never-ending effort to survive, and until they find the most perfect and strong form in architecture, the primitive living space reaches today's expression through trial, continuous improvements, repetitions, and transformations. The creations of the past that are still alive, not simply standing, are those that include in themselves the explosive force of the compiled energy of human toil that can find behind every stone. You can find this energy at the monasteries that hang over the cliffs or the bridges with wisdom and precision unite the banks of a river as a declaration that man succeeded to surpass the limits of his capabilities and also able to stop the time. Architecture should primarily be based, express, and basically serve the substantial needs, wishes, and dreams of men. Beyond the geometrical characteristics of space that are imprinted in their shape and form, there exist the invisible forces that define the substantial context and derive from life itself. Every era, as time goes by, leaves behind its own trace. If this trace exhibits something substantial for its own time, then it lasts through time and never disappears. This is a building built 1971 by, personally, one excellent architect, Cleon Crandonellis. Is a public work corporation building in Athens. Beyond the building's physical life expectancy, there are significant values imminent to a building that establishes respect for it. Widely shared symbolic and aesthetic dimensions of a building can therefore be the reasons for a building's endurance. There exists an invisible thread that unites all the important creations of all times and altogether form an ecumenical heritage of centuries. Those are the foundations of one's work. Those are the supports of one's works. The tradition for those of us working in Greece plays a double role. It is the gear and the brake in the same times. It takes a lot of effort not to become imprisoned in its magnetic attraction, trying to move forward free, trying to comprehend the cumulatively reality around you. It takes a lot of effort and responsibility to leave behind your own personal fingerprint. The important instances of contemporary Greek architecture are the moments where the architectural creation functioned free for the past without introspection and isolation. This is Piteris residence and studio built 1956, around 1958, with an architect, Aristomenes Provelengios, born in 1914, I think, and died around 2000, if I remember correctly. The contemporary Greek architecture was able to function properly when it decoded and comprehended the deeper essence of the local tradition and the contemporary surroundings, and was finally able to express this reality with a new context. Greece was always a crossroad of civilization, a crossroad between East and West, between North and South, a meeting place of very old and very important civilization. This coexistence, this coming closer, gave birth to the new and the substantial. The dilemma local or international, it is a pseudo-dilemma and it only helps the perpetuation of a sovereign model that exists in Greece for years. If we manage to free ourselves from the narrow iconographic tradition, cutting ourselves loose from the wires that imprison us in the anachronistic doctrines and legends, and look straight forward, it is only then that we'll be able to accomplish something. This is a building of Tassos Thbiris, recently finished. It's an offices of a construction corporation in the suburb of Athens. We need to express with sincerity our hesitations, our anguish, our contradictions, our dilemmas in the multiform and fluid reality that surrounds us. The built environment is the crystallization of life itself, an objective testimony in time. The buildings under this spectrum are never neutral, and each and every one of them declares in the most revealing way the reasons that gave them birth. If we look back into history from antiquity to our times, we will realize that the architectural creation existed either or to the side, over or inside a pre-existing cell. The incorporation of the new to the old is an ancient trait of architecture. In a broader sense, every building is incorporated into a natural and to a natural or artificial environment that pre-existed. This is an open theater on Lycabettus Hill in Athens, designed in 1964 by the architect Taki Zenetos. It's a metallic structure. The architect needs to continuously think and concerned with this fundamental issue, because every real creation communicates with what it pre-existed and with what will come in the future. In a way, there is always an umbilical cord that connects the creation with the past and the future, respectively. Questions as to how the new will stand beside the old, or how the new material will combine harmonically with the older, are always standing. The moment that you start designing, you always feel the urge to turn back to the archetypical space arrangements, a wall, a portico, an arcade, an alley, or a patio. You bring back familiar memories from a room with a high ceiling or another shady and breezy space, the way light was reflected on a certain material or a color surface. You bring in mind the inner, well-protected courtyard of a monastery in contradiction with the building itself that seems to hang over the steep rocks fighting gravity. You remember the old industrial building with the high-rising chimneys that brought smoke up in the air, or the open-air stands that farmers build on the streets to sell their products. We live in a country with intense alternating landscapes on the islands and on the mainland. The naked rough nature of Cycladic islands, for example, with a stony, steep ground, resembles big Cyclopean rocks thrown into the sea. The Greek word topos contains many meanings. Topos is the landscape, the light, the climate, the colors, the materials, the textures, the nature, and among of all this, the presence of man that inhabits it. The ever-changing and unique mountain crest of the landscape, where the earth meets the sky, the relation of the mountains with the level of the sea, and the way that one complements the other is a unique whole. So what is the way you build in a country like Greece on a ground which is full with the ruins of past, remnants of a continuous culture presence that goes back decades of centuries? How can someone incorporate a new and contemporary building side by side with all this? This is a tower in the at Naxos Island. It's Tower of Himaro, Himaros Tower. It's built in the 4th century BC. It's still standing there with a little help of this thing. And it had the same age with Parthenon, after all. This is an important and difficult question. that cannot be answered easily. Ancient alleys, stone walls built with the knowledge and the expertise of centuries, further up a small church, and all deriving from a need, all following the measure of everyday life and the scale of human toil in a way that time becomes meaningful. Houses, sheds, sheepfolds, all skillfully built, wisely incorporated to the environment and the unique climate, as if they rise from the very old past. Architecture and nature coupled together in an individual whole in a way that the one cannot exist without the other. So this is a tricky slide. If you observe over there, some place cannot see very easily, there are some red things over the hanging. It's not a Greek slide. It's done on purpose. It's a small village around 200 kilometers north of Beijing. And I've done it on purpose because I believe that when speaking about tradition, I'm speaking mainly about Greece. But the things I'm saying have a general... they are not concerned only Greece. It's a way to express these tricky slides. It's a way to express my belief that the previous comments I've done till now about tradition are not necessarily connected with Greece, has a broader meaning. Okay, if the only form of tradition is the one that urges us to follow the paths of the previous generation with blind and timid devotion to the forms of the past, then this tradition should be discouraged. The comprehension of tradition demands from somebody to have completely understanding of what has perished in the past and what elements of the past are still present. Those are the elements that give to an architect, and not only, the conscience of his position in time and the feeling that he is contemporary. It is interesting in this context to quote T.S. Eliot from a text on tradition included in one of his early essays on criticism. Eliot writes, "No poet, no artist of any art has his complete meaning alone. His significance, his appreciation is the appreciation of his relation to the dead poets and artists." And he continues, "The existing monuments form an ideal order among themselves, which is modified by the introduction of the new, the really new work of art among them. The existing order is complete before the new work arrives. For order to persist after the supervention of novelty, the whole existing order must be, if ever so slightly, altered. And so the relations, proportions, values of each work of art towards the whole are readjusted. And this is conformity between the old and the new. Architecture exists inseparable and indivisible as to the succession of place and time. In reality, none of these two successions exists without the other. The separation and the division is a convenient invention, a social invention, which in my opinion distorts the approach of architecture. We could say that four different schools of thought for the relation between tradition and contemporary architecture exist today. The first school of thought, in an effort to reply to this question of the historical continuity, outbids the design for restoring, preserving, reviving, and reusing. There are many examples of this approach, not only in Greece. This is a tower in the island of Naxos. It was a monastery. Sometimes it was a monastery, sometimes it was a tower, depending on the historical and political situation of the medieval time in the Aegean Sea. Now transformed to a cultural center and a museum. This is some photos from the inside. The second school of thought is near to the one we already talked about, and it accepts the old under the circumstances of the era that gave birth to it, transforming it to a monument, and tries to elevate it to a landmark. the importance of the inherited architectural work as a proof of historical continuity, as objects of artistic value, and as objects with educational potential, at least in theory, cannot be denied by anyone. The two discussed schools of thought are very similar. The point of view we will discuss now is the absolute opposite. This view denies the sanctification of the old and glorifies what supposedly, in denial of the old, is the creation of the new. The worshipping of the out-of-time and space novelty has contributed to a lot of buildings that surround us today. Finally, there is also the effort to see the new as a bequest of the old in a relation where the space and time coexist and converse with the past, defining new relations with the future to come. I want my work to belong to this last category. The high-rising volume of a monastery with wooden smaller projected units and a contemporary comment. The basic prism constitutes the core of the design and carries suspended the metal volumes of an office building in Athens. There is the core, the concrete core, and those are the metallic suspended volumes. Design, I think, is here. I think it's more easily understood. Designed in 1996 and completed 1999, and as all the buildings included in this second part of this presentation, with the collaboration of my partner, Tassis Papayoannou, with whom I am working together at the university and to our architectural studio for the last 35 years, for the time of our graduation in, actually, 1976. The metal grids and the wooden blinds complete the two facades and define two zones, creating an open-air transitional space between the interior of the offices and the city, protecting the working space from the sun, as it was usually done in wooden constructions. The same result with the brickwork, a transparent wall protecting from the sun and letting the air flow freely. And some attempts to work with brick today and unplastered concrete. We try a lot to think about the texture of different materials and how they will react under the very strong Mediterranean sun. The use of color, a picture from the island of Simi, if I remember correctly. Contrary to the myth, not all the walls are white. It is the same myth that forgets that even the Parthenon was not white at the time it was built. Our attempt to use the color, I believe we use the color. We are influenced in this the use of color for the from the work and the of Aris Konstantinidis, and not only after all. This is a house in a suburb of Athens designed in 1989 and built between 1990 and 1992. The combination of masses and the relation between empty and fill areas refer to the language of modern rationale. Bare concrete, the structural frame, painted steel, bricks and plaster. Another house in a rural area not too far away of Athens. Designed in 1992, completed 1995. The composition of independent volumes, morphologically evoking the traditional rural homes found in the Midland, constitutes the central idea of the design. There is a three... four different units. There is an area of the bedrooms, a living area, the kitchen and dining, and a small guest room, all connected with a road, internal road in this way. Some details from the same building. The entrance of the building is over there. It's the way you approach over the mountain and you enter this building this way. Details from the same building. Another house designed with the same principles, various structures in an effort to create open spaces protected from the sun. On the roof, this is covered today with a plant that they have put over there to create a very pleasant area for the summer nights. The roof, the balconies, all in the backyard over there. From the same house, this backyard I was talking previously. The metallic structure of an industrial building and the metallic cover of a courthouse of the city of Aegion, a first prize in architectural competition that was built in late 90s. From the same building, the interior of the large covered yard. This is the covered yard, and in left and right there are the courtrooms. An archetypical space arrangement, a school organized around the patio, a sketch, and the school completed by 2004 near the city of Patras, photographed from an helicopter. An introvert building, the yard is the heart of life of the school. The yard is an open yard. Those are the classrooms given to this area. Actually, everything is organized around the void. The individual is a part of a group, the class, but all groups refer to one another, look to one another, forming a coherent whole. Details of the same building, the use of the bare concrete, the school from the ground level. This is the, near Patras, this is the bridge connecting the Peloponnese with the mainland. The entrance over there, the big hall of the entrance used for multipurpose, as a multipurpose hall, with the wooden structures that protect this area from the sun. The yard, inside yard, with a portico that surrounds it, another archetypical arrangement. The northern part of the building. That's why it's the shade, because it's north. With large openings, and the southern part, which is more close, with a wooden structure protecting the classrooms, and some areas used from the classroom for open space lessons. From the same building. This is an ingenious system for the earthquakes used in a lot of places of Greece. A rigid lower floor, stones, with a more flexible upper level. So it has a rigid on the ground and more flexible upstairs that it moves freely, and if it collapses, no big damage, it's wooden after all. An attempt to use the same type of construction in two houses recently built in one of the northern suburbs of Athens. A metallic frame with wooden panels on top of a concrete construction. The concrete construction stops here. The protections, you can see also the protections provided by the windows opening upwards, which is also used, Spiros Amourgis was showing us yesterday from Monen Vasia, but you can see it in a lot of other areas of Greece, creating shade. It is useful to make a comment with the help of this photograph. The concept of this building has nothing to do with the tradition. We are discussing about tradition, and this is why I'm referring to some details of the building. I'm not presenting the buildings. In this photograph, it's obvious. The idea of this main concept of this building is this L shape. Construction. There are two buildings. The two L's, one another, form a kind of protection of the two of the group of these two of two houses, and has nothing to do with tradition whatsoever. The same house from it's recently finished. Actually, it's not finished any. Some details are missing from it. Finally, I will present a museum of traditional professions and environmental education in the area of Stymphalia. This museum has a lot to do with our conference because it also deals with tradition and has a lot to do with environment. The museum is designed to be built on the abrupt of one of the last green hills that surrounds the lake of Stymphalia. The building site, Stymphalia is where the lake is, which is not actually a lake all the days of the year. This is the lake. The building site is marked out towards the side of the lake by a passage through the dense bushes that connects the provincial highway to the observatory of the top. I'm standing on the top of the hill, from where one can enjoy the view of the entire area of Stymphalia and the surrounding mountains. The museum refers to the lake and consists of two units. The first contains exhibits that relate to the traditional professions of the general area, which often are closely connected to it. The second unit aims at informing sensitizing visitors to the environment and the ecosystem of the region and their history. The rhythmical repetition of parallel parapets gives the design scale to the building and facilitates the creation of exhibitional subdivisions. The linear synthesis is enhanced by the roofed wooden balcony with view to the lake that is fundamental and principal reference of the museum, which appears as it floating into the void. The vertical chimney of concrete contrasts with the horizontal development of the building is also a sign, seeing from way far away. Since the museum is built on sloping ground, the inclination determines the volumes of the building. However, this gradual enlargement of volumes does not hide the building. On the contrary, the building emerges from the ground and it strongly manifests its presence, free from iconographic references and picturesque clichés. This is the void. This is you stand there and you have a look in an observatory looking to the lake. This is a picture from a monastery in Athens looking the northern Aegean. And this is a picture from the balcony of the museum overlooking the lake Stymphalia early in the morning. And this will be the last slide of my presentation. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.